Hi, I'm Kathy Forstein, Music Director at KC Cafe Radio. Today we are chatting with John Batdorf. You may not recognize the name, but you know his music. John has sang backup vocals for Motley Crue, written jingles for commercials, written the music for Touched by an Angel, and written songs for Kim Carnes and England Dan and John Ford Coley. John's newest work is titled Soundtracks to Recovery, an album which believes that we are all recovering from something, and music has the power to change our lives. John Batdorf, thanks so much for joining us today on KC Cafe Radio.
Well, thanks for having me, Kathy.
It's a pleasure to talk with you again. I think we've chatted a couple of times now. And
yeah.
We're so proud to have you as part of KC Cafe Radio and playing your wonderful songs on our station.
Well, thank you so much for that.
Your newest CD is called Soundtracks to Recovery. Why did you want to do an album with the theme of recovery?
Well, the way it actually started, and it kind of started by accident, about 9 years ago, I have twin boys, and one of my sons got pretty much heavily into drugs and was using methamphetamine, and it was something that my wife and I didn't know how to relate to. I mean, you know, we were born in the 50s, and so we experienced the summer of love in California and kind of got all the hippie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This was like a whole different level of drugs that we didn't understand, and we really felt like we were losing my son.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing we could do to break down the barriers, so there was no communication going on. And I came to California when I was 15 with a band. I was from Ohio, and we were supposed to come out for the summer, and somehow I've finagled my mom into letting me stay longer, and I'm still here, which is a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of grew up without parental supervision from 15 on,
mm-hmm.
and there was so much great music in that time period, and so many great writers writing about everything, and I learned a lot about life and growing up, and trying to mold my life after songs I heard, and try to do the best I could and be a good person and all this stuff. And so I went to my writing friend Michael McLean and said, you know, nothing else has worked. What if we wrote a song that maybe would touch him in a way that would maybe just open a glimpse of hope and communication between us?
Mm-hmm.
So we wrote a song called I Don't Always Win, which is a song just about the struggles of someone who is trying to recover and is addicted, and the ups and downs and, you know, the successes and failures that come with trying to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of played it for him in the car, and there was just kind of a moment that he knew what this was, and it was really kind of the first time we had connected in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
He just talked about it, and then as it turned out, I played it for other people that said, my gosh, that song's about me, and I
mm-hmm.
had no idea there was any kind of background in addiction or, you know, just bad things that had happened, and knowing that, you know, life isn't really just one big happy parade. There are ups and downs, and
right.
and you know how we recover from them kind of makes us the people that we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it seemed successful, Michael and I decided to just start eventually writing. You know, we started writing songs that eventually would become the Soundtracks to Recovery record. But before we put it out, we didn't want to, you know, we didn't want to just make complete fools of ourselves. So we wanted to let it out and play it for the public, the songs at least, before
mm-hmm.
we actually made this record, because, you know, we thought maybe we're just nuts. Maybe this is not worthy of doing. So we played a concert for 700 addicts and family and friends of addicts, just kind of a free concert, and had no idea, you know, if they would be open to it. So we played, which originally this album was going to be called 12 Songs for 12 Steps.
Mm.
But we decided that it wasn't just really about addicts. It was about life and recovering from anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the response we had from this concert was so overwhelmingly positive. People were saying, where can I buy this record? And please make it as fast as you can. I need this. I need to have this reinforcement. Because we found out that when addicts are checked into rehab centers, their iPods are taken away because there are songs that are the soundtrack to addiction.
Really?
And yes, these songs would trigger something in their head and they would want to use or do something bad. So we thought, well, gosh, the soundtrack to recovery thing, what if there was a record that gave hope to people in their, in a desperate moment, maybe they could mm-hmm. get them through to the next sponsor, a call or whatever, because mm-hmm. that's how I grew up. I mean, music helped make me get through.
Yeah, it was healing.
And so it actually worked, and so we made this record. We tried to put it on Kickstarter, and first we got accepted, so we made a little film, and then Kickstarter decided that they did not want to do it because they didn't want to sponsor causes anymore.
Hmm.
So we were going, oh, wow, what are we going to do now? So we found another platform and didn't raise very much money. And so we said, we just have to spend our own money on this. We just, we'll just do this on our own because we think it's important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did and eventually got it done and released it. And it's funny that my distributor heard the record and really loved the record and had no idea what it was about. And he said, wow, if nobody knew, this would just be like a really cool record with really great songs on it.
Yeah.
Which is really good because we didn't want it to be this thing that's pigeonholed where people, because a lot of people I found, and it's really remarkable that when people hear recovery or addiction, they're resistant to even being open to hearing it because they don't want to be preached to.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel like it's a religious thing or something
right.
that they're not interested in. And so that's the kind of battle you run up against. But as soon as people listen to it, the whole thing changes. The barrier is broken down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our challenge. But Michael and I put this out, and I continued to play a few recovery centers. As a matter of fact, Phoenix House in Columbia, Missouri. I played there twice, and each mm-hmm. time I played there, it's very rewarding to me at my age to do this because it takes me back to when I first started, when there was a time when music was so important to everybody,
mm-hmm.
before the internet and before all the cable TV. Music was a focal point, a great way of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And so people would listen to every word and hang on to the song and they'd play them over and over again. And you could see it in their eyes that they got what you were saying. And that is, for different reasons, that's what's happening when we play this stuff live. So you see the people who need to hear this and how it affects them emotionally. And it's been great. I was just in Seattle last weekend with Michael McLean. We did, I think, 5 shows up there because it's September is Recovery National Recovery Month.
Okay.
And every show was just fantastic. It was just great. And I feel, even though I kind of went in knowing what this was about, I've learned so much about things that I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. existed and how people struggled. And I mean, it's been remarkable. It's been a very sobering and eye-opening thing for me, and I'm really glad that we did it.
Yeah.
That's the short answer.
Yeah, the short answer. So why did you've collaborated with a lot of people over the years. Why did you decide to collaborate with Michael McLean on this album?
Well, Michael and I have been friends for over 23 years, and we've been writing music. Michael actually got me back into writing songs. I did music for TV and commercials and all kinds of other things, just kind of paying jobs, not really wanting to do any kind of an artist thing. And Michael kept encouraging me to write, and we kind of clicked. And even though we were so different, something about when we write together, it just works. So, and Michael had a family member who had gone through some addiction problems. So, you know, we both had lived this, mm-hmm. and we thought that we should do this. And Michael is such a dynamic speaker, great songwriter. And the two of us go out there, and he talks, I sing, he plays, and it's just, it's a great thing. It really is great. I can't think of anybody else I could have done it with other than Michael.
That's great. Were all these songs written specifically for this project? I know Mama's Coming Home was on your One Last Wish
right.
CD. Were the other songs written specifically for this, and why did you decide to include Mama's Coming Home on this CD?
They were actually all written for this project. Along the way, I just like the song so much. They fit on mainstream records. I just recorded them and released them as we were going because we didn't know when we were actually going to make the record. Mm. I want songs like that to just fit. But that was a song that was written about a family who was preparing for Mom to come home from a recovery center.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to show her love and be ready and give her support when she came home. Because the recovery is not just about the person who is addicted, it's the family and the friends and everybody's involved.
Mm-hmm.
That song was about it. It was always meant to be on this record. And we also, you know, we wrote songs in the early 90s, song Let It Go. We wrote Look Inside. What else was there? Oh, It's Not Heavy. And as we were making this record, you know, originally it was going to be 12 songs for 12 steps. And then we decided to just include as many songs that felt like the right kind of songs for the project.
Mm-hmm.
And went back and revisited songs we had written, you know, over the 90s. And it's a little cosmic, but we feel that the reason we met, the reason we wrote all these songs, which we didn't know why we were writing them, was because eventually one day we had to make this record. And,
mm-hmm.
and some 20 years to figure it out, but we were well-armed once we were ready to make the record.
Yeah, and so the writing took over 20 years. How long did it actually take to record it?
Probably, you know, pretty much for me, it takes close to a year, because all the, you know, the songs that were done in the 90s obviously were completely rearrange, recut acoustically, and
mm-hmm.
so it took around a year. And you know, we were doing it on our dime, and we always pay people unless they insist to work for free, which we've never said no to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're really, really happy with the record, and now we're building a website. It's called To Recovery, and eventually it's going to have all of the music, and we were in the process of making a video for one of the songs, which is I'm Changed. And we want to have kind of an interactive website that people can share, you know, their experiences and their music, and just kind of have a community of a place where people can go to that's really positive and reinforcing to them. So
that's
great. That'll get done. We're just, you know, when it's on your dime, it just takes time, and we're going as fast as we can afford.
Right. Yeah, we're playing I'm Changed on KCCafe Radio. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
You said that, you know, you guys were doing this on your own dime. Did you record this at home, or did you go to a studio, or where was this recorded at?
Well, I have a studio at my house, and most of it was recorded here at my house. I did record the duet with Arlene Cole at their studio because she was more comfortable being there, which was great. And that particular collaboration with Arlene, vocal collaboration, because I told Michael we needed a song about, you know, couples recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the divorce rate is so high, and so we thought it needed to be a duet, and I love Arlene Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Great artist, such a great singer, and has such passion in her voice and such sensitivity.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
That I said, gosh, I sure hope Arlene will agree to do this with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we went, she did, and we went into the studio unrehearsed, and spent 9 hours working on an arrangement that felt like it was a couple kind of sitting at a table saying, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. We can't keep going down this road. It felt so great. It felt so conversational with her that, gosh, I just love that cut.
Right, yeah. The song's called Won't Go Down That Road Again, and we're also playing that one on Casey Cafe Radio. But that one, okay. You're right, it sounds like a conversation between a couple. And I was just wondering, did when you originally wrote it, did you write it as a duet in mind?
Yes, all the way. That was the original thing that I came up with, a little musical part, and called Michael and said, I think I have this song, and this needs to be a duet.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was completely, from the very beginning, that was the idea. And I'm so glad we did it, and so glad it came out like it did. And then, you know, we did it. It was going to be kind of a folk thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were playing it, and then once Arlene and I sang, we thought, gosh, this feels like it needed to be bigger. I mean, this is a really big statement. So not only did we add, you know, a full band to it, we still got down. We thought, this sounds great, but man, wouldn't it be great if we had like a quartet of string players and write a really great arrangement.
Yeah.
Put that on there. So we did that, and eventually it became this epic kind of acoustic duet. And
It's a beautiful love song. Yeah.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I loved it too. And and Arlene sang it so great.
It's a beautiful song. Yeah. So go to the website and request the song and listen to it. It's really beautiful. Probably my favorite cut is Ain't Dead Yet.
Mm-hmm.
What was the inspiration for that song?
Well, we had, the record was, we'd selected, I think we had 16 tunes that we thought would really work. And my dilemma was, well, we don't really have like an opener. You know, we can't just start right away with, you know, Won't Go Down That Road Again, or I Don't Always Win, or we need to kind of set it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't sure how to do it. And I was sitting in my studio playing, and I thought, well, you know what? I think that if this song is about the power of music and how it can affect people's lives and how it's affected my life, maybe I should just write that. So sitting there, and I said, I play guitar, I like that best, I'm not a star, oh, but I've been blessed. And all of a sudden the song started coming.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole message is that, you know, as long as we're still here on the planet, even though we screwed up and we think it's the worst of times, as long as we're alive, we can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't the graceful way to say it as far as Ain't Dead Yet, but it's just like the right way to say it.
Yeah, I love that title. I'm a Monty Python person, so when I saw that title, it's like, oh, it's like, you know, I ain't dead yet. I'm not dead yet, kind of from Monty Python. But I love the message of the song, and I just like the message of those words. You know, I'm a survivor. I'm here. I'll be here, kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
I want to ask you about another project that you've recently released with your friend Mark Rodney. You guys worked together back in the 70s and put out 3 albums together. And you recently released Portfolio, which is sort of a collaboration of all those CDs. Is that what that is?
I've been so frustrated with getting the rights to these records, and they would come out and they would be released by certain companies, and there were flaws in the records, and they wouldn't pay us. And my distributor and I said, you know, we should just put this out. And so what I did is I selected all the songs that I had written for all 3 albums, which is pretty much 90% of the material. And also, I thought, well, maybe I should include the 2 songs from the Silver album that I had done, which was right after the Battle for Rodney project.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to remaster everything because, you know, they were all done over a period of 6 years, and the studio sounded different. So we started remastering. And then I just had this thought that I had a demo. Something I did in 1973, I went into a studio out here and sang 3 songs that never made it to Bat Dolphin Rodney's records. So I found the tape, really an old tape, and it was so old, I had to take it to a facility where they actually bake tapes to re-glue them.
Was it on like a 1-inch or what was it recorded
on?
It
was on a quarter inch tape.
Quarter inch.
So we baked it just to make sure we have one good stab at it, and there was still some dropouts and stuff in it. So I listened to it and fixed it up, and added some guitars to help with the fidelity of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the last three songs on the portfolio double CD are three demos that never ever were made on Battlefield Rodney Records, but were meant to be one day.
Oh, that's neat.
So it's a lot of music. It's like, I think, 116 minutes of music.
Yeah, it's what, like 30 songs, I think, something like that.
Oh my gosh, it's at least more than that.
Yeah, at least. I was looking at it. I was listening to it the other day, and it's a lot of music, a lot of great music too.
Okay.
Do you still work with Mark Rodney?
You know, we did a little thing back in like 2007. We started going to Folk Alliance and played a little bit, and eventually got the opportunity to do a concert on XM Radio, which we released as Still Burning, which I believe you guys play Summer of Love on your station.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the songs from that. But after a year, he was kind of losing interest. And so we just decided to maybe just, not do it anymore, because he didn't really want to practice, didn't want to tour, and just, it was just time for him not to do it anymore. And,
mm-hmm.
and I really miss doing it with him because he's really, really good. And, but he was done. So I'm really glad that we got to do what we did. And now re-releasing that double CD, it's kind of nice because we're getting a lot of airplay on it again. So it's great.
Yeah. It's wonderful. You've worked with a lot of people throughout the years. You've done a lot of work in the last several years with a couple of different people, with James Lee Stanley and Michael McLean.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep all these different projects compartmentalized in your own mind?
It is kind of hard to keep up the hats, because it's a different hat each gig. Because for a while there, I was doing the solo stuff. Then I was doing the All Wood and Stone stuff. Then I was doing the Battleford Rodney stuff, and all a completely different song base, completely different vibe, different parts. So it was a lot of rehearsing. But after 10 years of working together, James and I are not going to be doing the All Wood and Stones thing anymore. I'm very proud of those two albums that we did. But, I just really want to do this, what I'm doing. So,
you did a Rolling Stones project and a Doors project with James Lee Stanley.
Well, he did that with Cliff Eberhardt.
Oh,
I didn't want to do it. I was not a big Doors fan, and
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to do it after we did the All Wooden Stones record, which I love so much. So we did another Wooden Stones record a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And then, I just said, it's time to move on. So right now the emphasis is on Soundtracks Recovery, and I'm really excited that a bunch of new songs are coming, and my goal is to, I have one that's almost done, except for some backgrounds, and I want to try to do a Kickstarter campaign, but I want to have a finished master just to show where the record's going, and maybe that would help me get more than 10 cents on a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah. So do you you've worked with so many different people. You must enjoy the process of collaborating with someone. What do you think you get from collaborating that you don't get just working on your own?
Well, as far as writing, it's really hard to find a good writing partner. And in the beginning in Battleford Rodney, I wrote everything by myself. It just felt like they were personal songs that needed to be just me. And then I was signed as a staff songwriter in the late 70s, early 80s. So I started collaborating with a woman here in L.A., Sue Sheridan, and I found that it was really kind of interesting because, everyone you bring to the table who has, a lot of skills is going to hear something a little bit differently than you do. So all of a sudden it was, opening up doors that weren't there before. So that I really loved that process. But then I tried to write with other people, and it just didn't work out. I mean, some co-writers just nod their head while you do all the work, and that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got with, I met Michael in 90, and we started writing it, and I just discovered that we both made each other's songs better when we wrote them. They were better than if I wrote them by myself or he wrote them by himself. But the two of us together go to this other place that, because we both fill the voids of what the other person may lack, even though they're very competent and very skilled. And the songs that we've written over the last 20 years are songs that maybe we would have never written as individuals. So mm-hmm. I really love the process, especially when you really, really respect the person and trust the person that you're working with. Because there can't be an ego. I mean, it's almost like a marriage, and there are sensitive times. I mean, one of the times that we experienced, I mean, Michael and I usually are on the same page, and one time I sent him a track with a melody. I said, hey, tell me if you hear anything on this. So he wrote this lyric, and he was so excited. He played it for his record company, and they thought it was great. Mm-hmm. So he sings it to me over the phone, and I didn't like it. And it's like, what do I, you know, how do I say this? Because, you know, he's my buddy, and he's so pumped about this thing. And I just said, you know what, Michael? I think it's a good lyric, but this is not where I wanted the song to go. And he goes, all right, I'll use it for something else. So that's the kind of relationship we have, and that's what makes it great. Because there aren't egos. I mean, there are egos. But we just trust the other person so much that it just works. It just works.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So when you two collaborate together, do you bring songs separately, or do you just sit in a room together and try to write together? How does the relationship work?
Well, we've done it almost always. We've been in the room together just banging it out because we're both perfectionists, and we don't want one word to be wasted. We don't want, you know, we don't want to throw in or a throwaway line. We don't want to throw away melody. We don't want to throw away arrangements. So we just bang and bang and bang. And lots of times I have, because Michael still writes a lot on his own. And actually the new title song to my CD that I'm working on now, I wrote by myself. But when we write, I usually try to get kind of a guitar thing going, because most of my songs start with a kind of a guitar riff or a guitar, something, a melody. And then I try to develop some kind of an arrangement. And, you know, we'll blurt out words that, you know, like ain't dead yet or whatever, and then just keep refining it and refining it. And then send it to Michael, who doesn't live in the same state. He lives in near Park City. And so I'll say, hey, what do you think of this? So he'll say, you know, I like this part, but what if we went here? And I go, yeah, great, great. So he'll write something, and then I'll go back, and, you know, I don't like this part. Can we change this part? And then we'll work on that, and then we finally get it done, and then we do a demo and live with it for a while and usually make changes again. And then we both feel that it is as good as we can make this particular song. Then we record it and move on.
Yeah, that's good. I had a songwriting partner for a while, and we seemed to always have our own songs, and then we'd come together, and then we'd just sort of be each other's editor in a sort of a way, and that's how we collaborated a lot of the time. For me, it's important for me to have an editor, because I tend to be over... I overdo it lyrically, I think, sometimes, you know, and something that could be said in one word, I drone on with a couple of sentences, so...
Right. Well, our famous thing we try to live by is... Don't bore us. Get to the chorus.
That's good.
Just kind of cut out the fluff. Try to make it interesting. Set it up, and then bang.
Right.
Get the chorus.
So you were mentioning your next project. You want to tell us a little bit about that? What you're working on, and when that might be out?
I took the summer off. The first time I've taken 3 months off in a long time.
Worked all last year, didn't you? Like, you put out 3 albums last year.
I did. It was really brutal. And by the time I got done with everything, I was so burnt and kind of get to the point where I wasn't kind of enjoying what I was doing, because I was just too burned out. It was too much work for 1 year. And so it took 3 months off. My wife and I took some fishing trips, went up to Bend, Oregon, which we're thinking about maybe moving to. We just loved it up there. And all of a sudden, I started getting inspiration because I had some time. Because I hadn't written anything in a while. And all of a sudden, I had all these ideas come out. And I was up in Bend, Oregon, just enjoying myself. And I had this track with me that I had worked on. And all of a sudden, I started writing this song. And it came together just so great up there because I was just kind of in this really beautiful, peaceful, serene area. And the song came out, and it's kind of my tribute to the Beatles, which completely changed my life. And
It changed a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. So I'm having fun with that, did all my guitar work and got the rhythm section done, and I brought in a guitar player that I love, Michael Dowdle, and Chad Watson on bass is fantastic, and Jason Webb just put a B3 on it, and now I'm getting ready to sing some backgrounds on it, and that'll be probably on my Kickstarter thing, so I'm just going to have a little sample of it out there just to show. But it feels very, very energetic and very, because the thing about the soundtracks recovery thing, it's such a deep thing, and we go to these shows and people have their stories, and it's hard to take.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're hearing stuff that you just, my gosh, how are you here? How are you alive? And so this record, I wanted to just kind of do something that's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And even though all the songs are always about real life stuff, but just have it a little more light because the soundtracks thing was so deep, and now I need to lighten up a little bit and have a little fun. And I've got 10 other things I've been working on with Michael, and probably won't have them written till maybe March or something, and then I'll start recording and hopefully have it out by next fall. It just takes so long with me. I'm just there's a blessing and a curse of having your own studio.
Right, right.
The blessing is that you can record all the time, and the curse is you can record all the time because you get an idea and you go, oh, God. So you go in there, and next thing you know, 7 hours have gone by.
Right.
But it takes me a long time, but, I've always been very proud of the work I've done in the last 10 years and don't want to compromise that now. So when it comes out, I'm sure it's going to be good.
I know it'll be good. I know it'll be great. Do you rent out your studios? Does other people come in and record in your studios, or is it mostly just for you?
Well, people have asked me to, but it's really just meant for me.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, there's such an enormous amount of effort recording people and concentrating on their thing. And it's really hard for me to find people that I really get into. Because there's a lot of people that just that don't keep my interest. And for me, just to do that just to get paid for a studio, I would just as soon just concentrate on writing, having fun with the family. I got 2 grandchildren now, which is just fantastic. I just don't want to just... When I work that hard, I want it to be on what I'm doing.
Right. You want it to be something you're invested in personally. Yeah.
It's a little selfish, but, that's really what I want to do.
Yeah. So you're going to be touring next year. You're actually going to be coming back through Kansas City in March. And we've got you scheduled for a house concert with our good friend over at Whistle Stop Antiques, Sally Smith, in Belton, Missouri, on March 7th of 2015. I can't believe I'm even saying those numbers.
You know, I have 2 gigs in 2016, which is crazy.
Oh, my gosh. Well, at least you're thinking ahead, right?
Yes.
So we're really looking forward to that date in March. Where else are you going to be touring? I know you said you have some dates coming up soon.
Yeah, I'm going to Ohio tomorrow for the weekend, and then coming back. Then I'm going to do a 2-week Texas swing, which is I've had such great success in connecting with the Texas. They're such an incredible songwriting support group in Texas. I always thought Texas was kind of twangy country music and people with cowboy boots and shotguns, and I went to Kerrville. And experienced that, and it totally changed. I mean, I was such an idiot to think like that.
Mm-hmm.
Completely changed, my opinion of Texas. And then I started going to the Folk Alliance in Austin, and it was it was mind-boggling how much great talent was there and how much they support singer-songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone there a bunch of times, and I've gone through Texas a few times, and this will be my longest stint. I'm playing, I think, something like 9 shows in 11 days.
And wow.
From Austin to Houston to Dallas to Lubbock. And every time I've played there, it's been to me, it's like the way the listening audiences were in L.A. in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They really, really, really give their attention when you're singing the song.
What kind of venues do you typically play at with these shows?
There are some churches that have venues that are ongoing. They're not religious gigs. They're just churches that host them.
Mm-hmm.
There are some house concerts. Really great series there, which I'm doing a few of, and just some actual singer songwriter series. And if anybody really was interested, and here's this in Texas on my website, which is johnbatdorfmusic.com, you can follow all the all the gigs, and you should come experience. If people haven't experienced a house concert, they really have to.
They're so much fun. The intimacy is incredible, and it's the best way, in my personal opinion, to see a performer is that in that kind of setting.
Sure, my wife and I, that's pretty much all we go to as far as live music is house concerts. There's so many great house concerts here in the Los Angeles region. Like Wes and Julie's, who are the perfect example of someone. They've been doing it for, I think, 16 years now, 12
wow.
shows a year, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's great.
It's not easy. It's not easy for the host to do this. It's hard work.
It's a lot of work. Yep, for sure. Well, we're really looking forward to seeing you in March, and I think you're going to love the venue that you're going to be playing at. It's an antique store, and
great.
Yeah, it's everybody that we've had play there really loves it. So
great.
I'm sure you're going to enjoy it as well. So, can we hear some new songs from you then when March comes around? And
I don't know. The hard part is that I write them, I start recording them, and then when I'm done with the record, I have to learn how to play them live and highlight all the parts that I think are the strongest. So
right.
I'm not promising, but I will try my best.
Okay. I won't hold you to it, but...
All right. Thank you.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you in March, and I thank you once again for talking with us today, John. Once again, the name of the CD is Soundtracks to Recovery, and you can find that on iTunes and at CD Baby, I believe, correct?
Yeah, actually, it's not on iTunes at this point. The only place
okay.
you can download it is on, you can click on my website and find out where it is. We didn't want to put it into mass distribution quite yet, but eventually it may have to go there. But right now we're keeping it kind of in a little boutique thing. And we'll probably, once I get our website up, we will have downloads directly from the website.
Okay, so for now, go to johnbatdorfmusic.com, which is
yes.
johnbatdorfmusic.com, and go to his music and his different projects he's been working on for the last several years. A lot of music on there that you can take in and discover John's music, or you can catch up with him if you've been a fan for years and catch up on what he's been doing in the last couple of years. So that's johnbatdorfmusic.com. You can also friend him on Facebook and Twitter. We really thank you a lot, John, for taking the time to talk with me today.
Well, thank you, Kathy.
And the Two Recovery website, do you know when that'll be up and running?
Well, actually, we have it's up. We have, it's the number 2, then Recovery, and you can sign up on an email list, and we will alert people as soon as it is out. And we will not bug people. We're not trying to sell. We just want to get this website up and let people spread the word. So now Two Recovery is up, and hopefully it'll be fully operational in the next month or so.
Great. All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes open for that one, too. Well, thanks again, and we're looking forward to seeing you in March.
All right. Thank you, Kathy.